If you're a parent or share a fridge with someone, Instacart is about to make grocery shopping so much easier. Because with family carts, you can share a cart with your partner and each add the items you want. Since between the two of you, odds are you'll both remember everything you need. And this way, you'll never have to eat milkless cereal again. So minimize the stress of the weekly shop with family carts. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three orders. Service fees apply for three orders in 14 days. Excludes restaurants.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Do you know about the true crimes that inspired a Bruce Springsteen album? Or the murders AC/DC was blamed for? How about Taylor Swift's violent stalkers? Or the suspicious deaths of Brittany Murphy and River Phoenix? These stories and more are told in the Disgraceland podcast, hosted by me, Jake Brennan, every Tuesday, where I dive deep into subjects from the dark side of music history and entertainment. So follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Nats play tonight on 106.7 The Fan, 6:45 first pitch, 6:15 pregame with Charlie and Dave. We'll take you up to their broadcast. What are you doing to protect your family's assets? The sponsor of our show, the law firm, Kondorian and Murad, can help you to draft your last will and testament. They'll set up a trust or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to tell them we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com. Got to thank Verizon for the Rock the Red scarfs.
Those are handsome. I like them.
And we just in time for the winter weather that we're getting this week in D.C.
Hey, what's up with that?
I could have used that yesterday. Your boy never dresses correctly. I just do not prepare for weather correctly.
That is true.
I don't look at it enough. So yesterday, no jacket, no coat, 45-degree first pitch at Nats Park, post-game, freezing my you-know-what off in the red box, and then waddling back down Half Street at 10:15 last night. It was damn cold. Felt like October playoff baseball.
Remember the Grinch joke? That was good.
Back when we used to experience that around these parts. But it felt like it. A man who knows a thing or two about cold, because he's around the ice all the time, is Steven Wino. Let's kick off the Blitz, the Caps, the Nats, the Commanders with Swino right now. Covers the Caps for the Associated Press. 895 goals. I remember asking you about 2 years ago for the first time if this was going to happen, and now it has. The chase is over.
Yeah, GP, it was unbelievable. The fact that Alex Ovechkin, after missing 16 games with a broken leg earlier this year, still manages to get to that 42-goal mark and get to 895 and pass Wayne Gretzky. Just a magical couple of days. Friday night at a home with 893 and 894, and just sort of a celebration of that. And then Sunday on Long Island, and almost a measure of relief that the Washington Capitals and Alex Ovechkin got to this point and can now sort of move past what is a completely absurdly historical accomplishment and now try to go on with their lives. But it is certainly a once-in-a-lifetime sort of situation.
Yeah, there have been a couple of times here lately, Swino, where he scored the only goal of the game and losses, kind of lost in all this, no pun intended, is they're not playing so great here at this moment as they barrel towards the postseason. Only five games to get right. It makes what's happened that much more remarkable, I'd say.
Yeah, Danny, and Alex Ovechkin has not been the problem, even though maybe at this point in his career, he's not the sort of physical force, average 18, 20 minutes a game player he was in his prime. When what they needed him to do was score goals, and he scored goals in five in a row, six goals in five games and all that. But there's some stuff off about the team game right now. Alexi Protas is week to week with that skate cut to the top of his left foot. Logan Thompson is out. We don't know how long with injury, and there's some serious concern about the Capitals needing to get things back on the rails.
Steve Wino, Associated Press. So let's get into that. They are playing okay if you look at the grand scheme of things since the holidays. But okay is not going to get them deep into the playoffs. And over the last couple of weeks, they've kind of cooled to a real, I would say, mediocre operation here in terms of the production. What are you seeing?
I'm seeing just mistakes all over the place, and really the lack of structure that made their game so consistent throughout the entire season. And they did have a cushion to play with, and there's a certain human element in here that I think a lot of this was they cared about getting Alex Ovechkin the record. And that's not saying that that's the only thing they cared about. But with such a cushion atop the Metropolitan Division and the Eastern Conference, the focus and motivation of this team was to get Alex Ovechkin the record because they don't want the President's Trophy. They don't really care about that. They'd love to be first in the East, have home ice advantage the first three rounds of the playoffs, and sort of figure it out from there. But so much of the game and the decisions within the game in recent weeks have been to try to get Alex Ovechkin the puck to be able to score goals and break this record. And there's you have, again, psychological elements in here. Jacob Chychrun finally gets his contract extension. Logan Thompson got his contract extension earlier in the season. And there really is kind of a coasting senioritis sort of status for this team over the past few weeks. That not that they can't be able to kind of put it back together and flip a switch. We're going to see if they're going to be able to do that. But this has not been the same consistent team structure game as the first basically 55-plus games of the season.
And Swanna, that's my big question is, I think the hardest thing to do, whatever it is in sports, is to get it back. Like, getting that huge lead is amazing. And, you know, when you're all of a sudden not sharp down the stretch and all these other teams you're playing are desperate or, in some cases, out of it, not very good, playing with nothing to lose, getting that intensity back, I think, is a harder thing to do than people realize. This is such a veteran team, by and large. But five games left, a couple of those injuries that you mentioned, I'm a little bit nervous here about turning the ship around.
Yeah, and you should be. And I think there's some internal nervousness about that, too, because you never know what's going to happen when the lights get bright again and the games go from, okay, well, we really don't need – I mean, everyone wants to win every game, right? But, like, these are games where the Capitals don't need them, and they've been playing desperate opponents the entire time. Starting that Sunday the 20th or the Monday the 21st when the series starts against probably the Montreal Canadiens at this point, they're going to have to figure out how to get that sense of urgency back because you can't manufacture it. You can't, in game 78, 79, when you don't actually need to win, feel like that. And that's going to be Spencer Carberry's job is to get this team going. And I think you're right. In terms of getting it back is important and tough to do, but also peaking at the right time. That's something that I think this team has been thinking about since the Four Nations break is how do you take a great regular season and be able to sort of build your game toward the playoffs. The OV chase certainly interrupted that in a lot of ways. And now that the celebrations are over, it's now how does this team over the past handful of games of the regular season build to where ideally you're healthy by game one of the playoffs and are ready to play a hungry young team like the Canadiens.
Swanna, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
Thanks, guys. Talk to you soon.
You got it. Let's talk baseball. Charlie Slows joins us to do just that after calling a win over the World Series champion Dodgers, 3 in a row for the Nats. Charlie, 4-6 sounds a whole lot better than 1-6, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely does. And get the feeling of a win. And last night, in very unbaseball-like conditions, temperature getting into the low 40s late in the game, 22,000-plus last night, might have been well over 30 on a nice night with warmer weather or even a weekend for sure. But that was a playoff-type feel game last night.
So how are they going to handle the pitching today? It looks like Brad Lord on the bump to start, but, you know, Kyle Finnegan's thrown for 3 straight days, had to get 5 outs last night. How's this one going to go today, Charlie?
We'll probably see Lord for 45 to 50 pitches, however far that gets them. And then we'll see if Davey plays matchups. He has another arm that can pitch multiple innings in Jackson Rutledge. Orlando Ribalta can give him multiple innings. And then he should have Jose Ferrer back in the bullpen tonight. Jorge Lopez would be available. Sims, maybe, maybe not. Salazar, maybe, maybe not. Finnegan, if he's available, will probably need an investigation. But this, I'll give you a little preview. He's on Nats on Deck with Dave tonight, and Dave asked him, "Do you have one in you?" He said, "Well, this might be a spa day for him."
That's funny. Yeah, he needs it. 3 straight days.
He deserves it. Feet up.
30-plus pitches on day three. That's unheard of. It doesn't happen. It kind of is a state of the union on that bullpen, though. It's an indictment, I think. Because I get the sense Davey realized you got a lead, you got a chance to beat the Dodgers, you got to pounce. And I don't know that he trusted anybody else to get him across the finish line.
Well, and there were a couple of guys unavailable, too. So Finnegan said he was good to go. He's more experienced, so you trust him. I thought, you know, if he got them out of the eighth inning and they didn't score that they, another run after he'd come into the game, that maybe they would go with somebody else in the ninth inning. So he threw 15 pitches in the eighth, and they didn't get anybody up, so we could see that he was going to come back for the ninth. I'll tell you what, that was big time last night, what he did. For all the analytics people who look at it and say, well, his hard hit rate, he doesn't get enough strikeouts, he doesn't do all the things that you really want in a closer, and you know maybe why he was out there as a free agent all winter. But you know what he gets? He gets outs most of the time, and if you have as many save chances as he did last year and you get 38 and you only mess up five, that's still a really high percentage because, you know, the top closers in baseball are not going to save every game.
C.J. Abrams' health, how's he doing?
They're going to sit him again tonight. He might be available to pinch it. They're hoping that he'll be able to play tomorrow. And if he isn't, they have a day off Thursday and think that he'll definitely be ready by Friday. I mean, when you have that type of thing this early in the year and, you know, the temperature is going to be in the 40s again, I think they've just been being very careful with him. And, you know, Paul DeJong was a shortstop most of his career, very under control guy. He made some really nice plays last night defensively at short for the Nationals.
Yeah, he made one particular terrific
sparkling to his
defensive
right, yeah.
play. I'm not sure if Abrams would have made to that point, Charlie. So we'll be excited to see him back in the lineup offensively, but I don't think they're going to miss a ton defensively with DeJong moving over to short. What'd you make of Dylan Cruz's base running to steal a run last night? I thought that was a heady winning play. And then also, he had a hit and an RBI taken away on a changed scoring. Did you have any issue with the scoring on that?
Well, you know, too many times now we see scoring as being based on exit velocity. It's kind of like if it's in the 90s, they're going to score it an error. And if it's over 100, when maybe it should be an error, they're going to score it a hit, you know. That ball did something that stayed down on Betts. I don't know if the official score decided that he didn't get low enough for it and that it was a fieldable ball. You know, that happens when plays can go either way. To me, if it's 98 miles an hour or 102, if you think you should field it, great. May call it an error. If you think it was hit hard enough or it's a difficult play for him to make and should be a hit, I don't think the exit velocity should matter that much if there isn't that much of a difference on whether you determine how hard a ball is hit to score it a hit or an error.
Charlie, Keibert Ruiz has been off to a pretty awesome start. There's still some of those moments, though, where you're kind of going, the growth isn't all the way there yet. And here's what I mean. Like, you know, 2-0 count, swinging at a pitch out of the zone or swinging at a pitch that hits him here and there. But there's still been enough progress where he looks so good. He's throwing the ball better as a catcher kind of bouncing around a little bit. I'm kind of buying this sort of 2.0 version of Ruiz as he's continuing to grow.
Yeah, and it's nice for him to show it against the Dodgers who traded him away when they didn't think he would ever, you know, surpass Will Smith or anybody else to be on their big league roster as a starter or a backup catcher. You know, for him right now, he was embarrassed at the way last year played out, and he really worked hard in the offseason, and he dedicated himself to getting into better condition, dedicated himself to be better at trying to block balls and work on his throwing, dedicated himself on working with the pitchers and game plans and calling the right pitches when they need to and kind of taking charge. And that's still a work in progress. But at the plate, you know, we saw so many chases and so many times where he made contact on bad pitches and you had weekly balls in play for outs. There's still, like you said, some of that there, but we've seen more good decisions so far that you really like that he's been able to turn into hits from either side of the plate and driving some runs. So, and they've been timely. They've been big hits at big times in the game.
Yeah, 7 runs batted in 9 games played for him, and he's hit safely in 8 of those as a .981 OPS. Charlie, thank you, buddy. We appreciate you.
All right. We'll see you later.
Yeah,
see
we'll
you,
be listening. Charlie and Dave pregame, 6:15, first pitch, 6:45 here on The Fan. 2 hours from now, they get started with the official pregame show ahead of Nats baseball. Let's talk football. Michael Phillips, Odyssey Richmond, and the Richmonder. Michael, we started the show with Mel Kiper's new 2-round mock draft. He's got Shamar Stewart to Washington, the edge from A&M at 29. Our poll of the day is, if you called the shots, would you rather them go edge, playmaker, or trade back from 29?
Without having seen the poll results here, I feel like trade back is probably a clubhouse leader here, right? Am I getting that correct?
It is indeed, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's the – you've got two, like, kind of consensuses building here. One is if they turn in the card, it'll be an edge because that's a position they need, and there's guys in the draft who fill that need. But I think the other one is they need some draft capital. By one count, they have the 31st most draft capital of all the teams, and that's not great because all the holes didn't magically disappear when they went on their run to the NFC title game. There's still a lot of roster holes here, you know, not to be Debbie Downer right out of the gate here on this segment, especially after Charlie, who's always such an uplifting presence. Yeah, I'm just here to bring the mood right back down, apparently. Hmm. But, you know, they brought in a lot of one-year options, a lot of Dan Quinn guys, Adam Peters guys. They're still working to build a long-term sustainable roster here, and having the 31st most draft capital is not ideal. I think they're going to want to ultimately have more picks when this thing and when the dust settles.
Are you with me that I don't think they should be done shopping on offense? The Laremy Tunsil is obviously the big ticket item. It solves or improves two spots on that offensive line. I know Deebo Samuel's a headliner in terms of what he is kind of more weapon maybe than pure wideout. I think they need another wideout, whether it's to take the top off or be another possession option or something. I'd love a speed back too. To me, I want them to kind of continue shopping in that department and not think it's solved. Where are you at?
I think they will too. I think that's kind of the traditional ebbs and flows of the NFL calendar. Start a free agency, lock in the big names, get the guys you want, big ticket guys go off the board. And then you usually see kind of a chill in the market until after the draft, right? You know, after those first, like, we got to get that guy moments are done, you want to see who you draft. You want to see who you end up with. And, you know, if they move back into the 40s, not unthinkable that they could take a running back, right? And that changes your approach. So after the draft, we usually see another wave of signings. And I'll remind you, Noah Brown showed up like the day before the season last year. There are occasionally guys to be found on cut day and later in training camp. And I think they'll be willing to use all those paths and all those options to build this roster as the summer goes along.
Michael, The Athletic does a nice piece every year where they go team by team, breaking down their offseason, and they get unnamed comments, unnamed GMs to give them comments and break the team's moves down. And for the Commanders, this comment from an unnamed executive was, "I'm afraid that's a team that is going to have the quarterback hit the sophomore slump, and now you have invested in all these older guys, and you're not really building a team anymore. You're just adding pieces. At some point, you get diminishing returns with all those old guys." What do you say to that?
Well, I do think, though, the presence of Jaden will attract those old guys year in and year out. I don't think it's a ridiculous plan to continue to build that way. Obviously, the Patriots did that very successfully for a long time. The Chiefs have done that to an extent year in and year out. If you're an elite team with an elite quarterback, those guys are going to want to play for you. You don't have to get young because you just kind of stay old in a weird way. A lot of that, though, is contingent on Jaden balling out in year two. There's certainly no denying that. If he takes that big step backwards, you're left holding the bag in a lot of ways after banking on going all in. Now, if I had to tell you right now what's going to happen, I think he's going to continue being a really good NFL quarterback. I worry, and I heard Schefter talking about this the other day, I think Jaden's going to take a step forward. I think that's probably the wrong expectation. I think, you know, guys with rookie years this good, you just want him to maintain in year two. You just want him to be as good. If he's as good as he was last year, that's a big win for these guys. And I think that's where you need to calibrate your expectations right now.
Miguel, awesome as always, buddy. Talk soon.
Take care.
Be good, pal. That's Michael Phillips. Check him out, Odyssey Richmond and the Richmonder. What record in sports will never be broken? They once said that about Wayne Gretzky's goals record. Alex Ovechkin changed that. We're going to draft unbreakable records next on Grant and Danny.
Carlson will make his way to the neutralized, dropping it for Dylan Strome. He and Chychrun will team up and glide through center. Right side to Wilson. Centered up. Ovechkin has it. He scores! He scores! Alex Ovechkin scores! It's 8.95. There's a new goal-scoring champion, and his name is Alexander Ovechkin. He has done it here on Long Island. His teammates mob him. There is but one. Alexander the Great, the greatest to ever do it in National Hockey League history.
Before Cal Ripken Jr. played in 2,131 games in a row to surpass Lou Gehrig's record as the Iron Man, nobody thought anybody would. And before Ovi scored 895, 894 was considered insurmountable. What record are you most confident in sports never gets broken? We'll pose that question to you guys at 800-636-1067. But we wanted to have a little fun with this. So we're going to have a draft. There are five of us here in studio. I think we can go at least two rounds, but maybe we could go three rounds. We'll see. We could do a snake draft. I'm going to randomize here order. Okay, so I'll tap it three times. One more tap. And Danny's going to get the first pick.
Okay.
The order will be Danny, Darris, Toby, myself, and Ryan. All right. Basically, you are drafting the most likely record to never be broken. You're essentially, you have to bet your life on something during your lifetime not being broken. What is your number one pick?
Cy Young, 749 complete games. 749 complete games to give you a barometer or give you a point of comparison. The active leader in Major League Baseball is Justin Verlander with 26.
Yeah. It's over, Johnny.
Yeah.
That one is a foregone conclusion.
The world's different. People throw, everyone was throwing 75 still and it was spitballs and Vaseline balls and snot balls like Ed Harris from Major League, maybe, but mm-mm.
The only way that one could be broken in, say, 100 years or something, is one of two things happens. One, baseball becomes like a five-inning sport or something, right?
Seriously.
And we just call it the complete game still. And, you know, not unlike a season being a different number of games. I guess that's possible. Or the other thing would be that we revert back to the old ways, where over time, everything's cyclical, and pitchers throw not as hard and throw deeper into games or something like that. But that is the entire list. I'm with you. I think that one never gets broken. That was right at the top of my list. All right, Darris, you have the second pick in the draft as we try to put together a roster of unbreakable records.
Now, just to clarify here, are we okay with single season records, or does this have to be career stuff?
No, it's records.
It's records,
whatever
man.
The record
All right,
is.
Cool. Then my pick is in. I will be taking the single season record that was set by Wilt Chamberlain back in 1965 and 66, where he had 48 and a half minutes per game average. No chance in the era of the NBA that we're in now, where there's all this resting players and load management, that anybody will ever break that record again.
Well, and there's only 48 minutes in a game now anyway.
There is. So the reason he went over 48, which was what I was reading, was because they had 8 overtime games that year. And in that entire season, he only came off the court for a total of 8 total minutes, which is unbelievable.
That is asinine.
That's a good one.
Exactly. Yeah. So nobody's ever breaking.
Well, it's not even Will Chamberlain's 50-point per game average season that you took.
Maybe maybe somebody will say that still.
Man.
Possibly, Danny. Let's throw some more out there. This early in the draft, why don't we? All right, Toby, number three, what do you got?
I'm going to go with Jack Nicklaus's 18 majors. Tiger Woods is stuck at 15. No one's getting past Tiger's record of 15, much less 18 majors for Jack Nicklaus.
See, so because Tiger got so close, I feel like it's very possible someone could get to that. What is Scottie Scheffler at in terms of majors right now? Because I feel like he is currently the greatest golfer on the planet, has been for several years. Has won a handful of majors, I would imagine. How many majors does Scottie Scheffler have?
Two.
That's it?
Hmm.
Is two? That honestly what? How many he's won?
I believe so. The 2022 and 2024 Masters.
Oh, my God. 18 feels like a boatload then, doesn't it? All right. I like it. Tiger was so close. You get what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you mean.
When
yeah.
We've almost
like, that was the best shot.
It.
But... Tiger was close, but now the fields are so much better than when Tiger played.
True.
Because people now golf because of Tiger.
All right. I like that. Let's see. Am I up now? I believe, yes, I got pick number four. Darius, my pick is ready. I will go with Ricky Henderson's stolen base record.
Great one.
For his career. Daniel, 1,406 stolen bases in the career of Ricky Henderson. 25-year career. Retired almost 500 more than anybody else in the era where you were athletic and you stole bases and that was part of the game. Now, they have changed the rules to make stealing a bigger part of the game over the last year or two, and that's cool. But you would still have to, let's say you just stole 50 bases in a season, which is borderline unheard of, you'd lead the league. But still, to tie his record, you would need to play for 28 seasons.
I mean, think of the Acuna season where he stole 70. You do that 10 times. 10 times you steal 70 bags in a year. That's awesome. You're halfway to Ricky. Halfway.
1,406 stolen bases. Nobody will ever do that. I feel very confident in that. All right, Ryan, you get the final pick of the first round, pick number five.
Yep, and the pick is in. I'm going with Wayne Gretzky's point record. He has nearly 1,000 more points than Jagr. Messier is right behind him as well with just over 1,000 points. Like, that is not being touched, and I genuinely feel like this will stand forever.
How could anyone ever equal it? You know, when you look at the gap to your point, Jagr at 1,900, like 900 points behind him. Come on.
Yep.
In fact, I think one of those wild stats that stops you in your tracks, basically if you only counted his assists, he would have more points than anybody else, and he was the all-time goals leader until this week. It's a really, really good one.
Insane.
Ryan, you get to double dip on the snake, my friend. Could you make it an all-Gretzky snake?
You won't go all-Gretzky.
You Wayne Gretzky guy over there.
No, I'm not a Wayne Gretzky guy, but the pick is in. I'm going to go with the single-season record of technical fouls in the National Basketball Association. That is Rasheed Wallace with 41 technical fouls. You simply just could not get that many technical fouls in a single season at this point. You'd be kicked out of the league. It is not happening. No one will ever touch that record at this point. Not with those Blazers teams back in the day and that 0-1-0-2 record there.
I've got that on my list as well. That's a good one. How many technical fouls did Draymond Green have in recent seasons? He's the NBA's current bad boy.
Yeah, it's like 10 to 12, it feels like.
Is that right?
I have no idea.
I mean, if you told me it was 7 or 22, I wouldn't know the difference. But 41 in a year for Rasheed Wallace. How's that even possible? He averaged a technical foul every two games. Now, obviously, there were plenty where he got two and got ejected, I'm sure. But 41 in an 82-game season. How did that not come with constant suspension?
That's insane.
The most Draymond ever had was 16, which was in 2022-23.
So he was still not even not even close to halfway there, really. He still needed a handful to get to the halfway mark. Well done. Okay, I like that one. Darius, I'm ready to make my next pick. I'll keep it local. I'll keep it simple, stupid. Cal Ripken Jr., 2,632 consecutive games, Major League Baseball. Players almost never play 162. They certainly don't string 162 together for seasons on end. The active MLB leader in consecutive games played generally hovers in the couple of hundreds at any given moment. I think, you know, right now, total games played. Think about this just as context. Andrew McCutchen, in his career, has played in 2,100 games, having been around, drafted in like 2008, I think it was, and got to the big leagues a couple years after that. That's not consecutive games, mind you. That's just a guy that's been around for a couple decades has played in 500 fewer games than Cal played consecutively. But I just don't see anybody surpassing that.
That one, just because of the way training is now. Guys are maximizing speed, strength, explosion. That puts things at risk. You know what I mean? It puts like ligaments at risk. It puts tendon, like they're maxing out their bodies in a certain way. It would take a freak of nature, Ovechkin style, quite honestly, who also played a position of inconsequence to do it. I mean, it's impossible.
Anybody have a guess at who's played the most consecutive games in baseball? I just found it.
I think I might know it, so I'm like, I'll bow out.
Is it Pete Rose?
No. This is current consecutive games in baseball.
Francisco Lindor?
Matt Olson,
629.
No way. Wow. Yeah. All right. Matt Olson. How about that? Is Toby's next?
Yes, Toby's up.
All right, I'm going to need a ruling after this, but the pick is in. In 1943, this player led the NFL in passing, punting, and interceptions. That player was Sammy Ball. Does that count?
Are you saying the record of leading the league in all those categories?
Correct.
Well, sure. I mean, if your point is no one's going to do it, why not?
Yeah, 1943, he led the NFL in passing. He averaged 45.9 yards punting and had 11 interceptions on defense.
Yeah, we'll never see it again.
That didn't happen again.
That combination. It's, you know, the cycle is one of these things in baseball, hitting for the cycle, that I think is kind of arbitrary. Like, you want a single, double, triple home run. No, I want four doubles. I want four homers. That's better than, like, yesterday, Shohei's at the plate. I'd rather him hit his second home run, not hit a random. I just need the double. Same with the triple crown. Average with home runs and RBI. Like, that's not the best thing. That's just an arbitrary three categories they told us at some point. So, like, that is three things that he led the league in. But, damn, that's amazing. To be that good that you are the guy doing it for your team.
Three completely distinct skill sets. Yeah.
All right, you get the last one.
Darius has to go.
Oh, Darius, I'm sure. I'm sorry.
Yep, that's fine. You want to skip me, that's fine. My pick is in. I just don't think that anybody runs the ball this much anymore, and I don't think there's any way that anybody's ever going to catch up to Emmitt Smith's 18,355 career rushing yards. The only active player that's getting anywhere close, and he's still 7,000 yards short right now, is Derrick Henry. And I would imagine Derrick Henry is probably not going to get 7,000 more yards before he retires. So I think that record's unreachable at this point.
That's the tell, that Henry's that far away. Because I could see Derrick Henry getting another 4,000 probably.
Yeah.
You know, because he could hit three seasons or something. But he's also going to run into a wall. 7,000 yards away is brutal.
Yeah, that position just doesn't have the longevity anymore to be able to keep up with that record.
I wondered if you got off to a really good start like Portis did, where he had 1,500 yards back-to-back years in Denver, year one and year two, and then comes to Washington, has a huge season. Like, that's the guy that would have the chance, is if you're really young in your career.
The greatest health luck possible.
Yeah.
At a position that doesn't happen.
But you also just don't get a chance because they move on from you the second they can at that position. That one, based on the changing of the game, Darius is right. That one's hard to imagine being broken.
Pick is in. I could go all Cy Young here with his win total, 511. Nobody's close to that. The next closest guy in the modern era was Greg Maddux, was 355, which is, you know, almost 200 shy. In honor of the guy, I'll go Wayne Gretzky. 1,963 career assists. More assists than anybody else has ever had points. We just addressed it. 1963, the next closest active leader is Sidney Crosby with 1,060. Just a cool 903 behind the great one as Crosby winds down his career.
Some others that we didn't mention here in our two-round draft. Joe DiMaggio's 56-game hitting streak. Never even been close to being touched in my lifetime. Pete Rose, 4,256 hits. Hard to fathom that ever falling during our lives. Nolan Ryan, 5,700 strikeouts in this era.
Yeah, no way.
Give me a break. Michael Phelps. I don't know about this one. I could see someone doing this maybe. Now, he has 23 golds, which is a boatload, because you think about it.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be in 4 or 5 Olympics. So you're talking about 16 or 20 years competing, which is really, really hard maybe. Unless you're him and you can get 7, 8, 9
right,
in one fell swoop. But 28 medals, 23 golds.
It would take a great team for all the relays, right?
Yeah.
And a softer field potentially over, you know, 3 or 4 Olympics. So that one to me is maybe more vulnerable than some of the others. Still ridiculous, obviously.
Sure. Pete Maravich, 44.5 points per game in a per season for college at LSU. That's pretty good.
Jerry Rice, almost 2,300 receiving yards.
Nope. 23,000.
Yeah, 23,000.
Justin Jefferson on pace for that in any way? How long would he have to play, I wonder? Because Jets, he shattered every single record to this point, X number of games in. Like, he's way ahead of Rice's pace. But I wonder how long he'd have to play.
16, 17 years at that kind of pace to do it.
Unlikely.
Right.
But They also throw more now than they did then. Passing totals are more prolific now than they were then. So I stayed away from like the Rice stuff for that
receiving,
reason.
Yeah. Boston Celtics, 8 straight NBA titles. I mean, you think of the other dynasties, that's a three-peat. And then it's like, okay, they're tired.
A, we won't see that again. And B, I pray we never see anything
like
that. God, that'd be boring. And respectfully to the Celtics. Mm-hmm. Just, hey, it's a basketball season. Boston's going to win this year.
Enjoy, Boston.
Or disrespectfully to the Celtics. That's fine, too.
Yeah, you hate the Celtics. Dad's not a Celtics guy. You really want to annoy him, talk about scissor routes or the Celtics? Those are the two things you can do.
Or DC Comics.
Or just his Madden League in general.
That's a good way to wind him up.
Passion. Yeah. Or Anthony
produces pretty much
at the other radio station. He hates him. Just can't
stand him. Loathes him.
Challenged him to a fight the other day. CK had to step in. Grant and Danny with you. What is the record in sports that will never fall? You're listening to The Fan. At 5 o'clock in 10 minutes, Eddie Olczyk's going to join us. He was in the booth with Kenny Albert for the Turner broadcast nationally of Alex Ovechkin breaking Wayne Gretzky's record on Sunday. We'll get his thoughts from the national perspective on what Ovi just accomplished. But we're asking you right now, what is the record you're most confident will never be broken in sports in honor of what Ovi just did? Let's go to Carlos in Saverna Park. What's up?
Gentlemen, I know it's not a popular sport, especially in North America, but I'm going to say Cristiano Ronaldo and his 931 goals out of 1,250 games. You got to think about it. With soccer, you know, Cristiano Ronaldo, it's 2025. I started watching Cristiano Ronaldo in 2006 when he played for Manchester United. Then he went on to play for Portugal, for Real Madrid. You know, it keeps going on and on. And to this day, he's still playing. He's still adding. So with that being said,
So let me ask you this. You say nine thirty-one. That's total goals. What is that? Because he's got 568 league, 56 cup, 171. Like, how do they quantify it? Is it just total goals in all matches?
Total goals for club and country. So that includes goals in Portugal and goals when he plays for his club team, like Real Madrid and all that.
So Messi has 856. And if Ronaldo were to stop playing right now, Messi would have to still score another 70 or whatever it is to catch him. I don't know enough about soccer to give you an educated opinion on that, but 931, the most ever. Pele had mid-700s, and Messi and him actively now are the only two in the mix. Now, he has played 2 years longer than Messi, so if Messi played for the 2 years after he stopped, I would think he would have a chance to catch him, but he would have to do a lot of scoring.
Yeah, but again, who knows? That's one of those I wouldn't be able to quantify because we sleep on how many leagues around the world there are that are pretty high level. Not like the super great top-level ones, but there's some pretty good ones all over the place. Maybe someone just stays there, right, in the Brazilian league and plays for the national team and does really well. I don't know. That's a tough one.
Let's go to Carlos in Alexandria. What's up?
Hey, this is a great topic, guys. Hey, Grant, I think of all of the ones that you guys mentioned, I think the one that you talked about, the 56-game hitting streak, might be the closest one to being done. But that's just an aside here. Because, you know, Molitor
got
close.
Hang on, before you move forward. When you say done, you mean that someone could break it?
Yeah. I mean, Pete Rose got close, and then he went on kind of a little hitting streak after that. And I think it took a pretty good...
That's 50 years ago, probably.
Yeah, I know, but there have been several since then, and there have been several in the 2000s.
I think in the modern era,
the
closest is 30, like 35.
Jimmy Rollins was. Did Rollins get to 40?
It's nowhere near.
Almost 40. Almost 40. Paul Molitor did. Yeah. But anyway, mine offer is this. Because of the change in the sport, the most dramatic change in any sport, I don't think John Wooden's 7 consecutive titles at UCLA with Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton will ever be touched.
That's a good one. It's too many players, too much parity, too much money, too much change. Yeah, that's a good one.
Let's go to Sonny in Springfield on G&D. What's up, Sonny?
Hey, what's up, guys? First-time caller?
Well, we appreciate you making the call.
That's very nice to do that, to call us.
Thank you. Hey, how come you guys haven't talked about the greatest player to ever play the game, Tom Brady?
What record?
7 Super Bowls.
Because I think Patrick Mahomes,
yeah, Mahomes has a decent shot, right?
Mahomes is on pace.
You know, on the pace, 3 Super Bowl compared to 7. Okay, that's fine. How about 103,000 almost yards?
Well, I mean, the only thing I'd say to that, thank you for the call, is
appreciate you.
Quarterbacks are playing deeper now than they used to in terms of their career. He obviously wrote the book on being great late into your career. But also, we throw more as an industry now than we used to. So when you look at all-time passing yardage stats, yeah, he's the current king. But a guy that plays his entire career in this era, like Joe Burrow at almost 5,000 yards this year as an example, I think it's 89,000 passing yards. The exact number I've got in front of me here. 89,214 for Tom Brady. Is that right? Is that what you got?
For all-time passing yards?
Yeah.
Looking up right now. Yeah, 89,000 to change. Yep.
So I'm just making sure because he said it was well over 100,000, so I didn't know if I was looking at something wrong. But 89,000 passing yards for him. Aaron Rodgers, this is funny, only 62,000. Matt Stafford, only 60,000. So you're talking about still needing, you know, another 5, like, very productive, really good seasons to be in the conversation for those guys. But somebody like Joe Burrow, if you were to average 4,000 yards a year, you would need 90,000 divided by 4,000. 22 seasons. Yeah, it's tough. You're right. I mean, that's really, really tough.
You look at Mahomes now, is over 32,000 passing yards. So basically a third of the way there. I mean, that rough back of the napkin math. If he, and Mahomes has been in the league, what, 7 years?
Yes.
He's the guy that would have the shot. I really believe this, by the way. If Mahomes decides, I would like to do this, he'll do it.
Yeah, and that's why I didn't put any of Brady's stuff in there, because I think Mahomes, but just any of the passing stuff, when Brady, for the first several years of his career, didn't throw it a lot. He was handing it off. They were playing defense. It was a different era anyway. He was a caretaker. Like, these guys are just slinging it around now. Let's go to Mark in Landover. What's up, Mark?
Hey, Grant. Hey, Danny. Great show as usual, buddy.
Appreciate you, bud.
Here's one for you. Toby looked it up for me. How about the Raja? I don't think anybody will ever beat the Major League Baseball record of the Raja. And Toby corrected me. They include the Negro Leagues now, and my hat's off to those guys, but I was talking about Major League Baseball.
So what's the record you're referencing?
424 batting average, yearly average. Ty Cobb was right behind him.
Oh, so this is Hornsby.
Rogers Hornsby.
24. Yeah, that won't be happening. The idea that anyone could hit 400 again will not be happening. But 424 for a season, that could have easily been part of our draft.
I mean, even if there's the ultimate paradigm shift away from the all or nothing approach, you're still, stuff's too good. Like, there are too many relief pitchers, too many changes, too many road trips, too many night games. It's just, no, you can't do it.
It's a different sport.
Yeah.
I mean, it'll be disrespectful to him, unfortunately. But, I mean, those guys were hitting softball. You know, it was underhand softball pitching. Closer to that than it is what it is today. I mean, I'm not even joking. Like, the stuff that he was hitting was closer to the league that you play in Fairfax than going up against Jake Irvin. Let alone, you know, in a Cy Young type arm. Let's go to Chris in Damascus. What's up, Chris?
Hey, fellas, thank you. Enjoy. This was fun. Kind of take off the thing. Anyway, I gave Edwin Moses out. He didn't lose a 400-meter hurdle for 10 years. But the baseball stuff is real fun, too. And I didn't look this up, and I don't know how you quantify this, but the Baltimore Orioles in the 70s had 420-game winners. And I think in the early 80s, the Oakland A's had 420-game losers all in one season.
Neither of those will probably happen again. Yeah, the 420-game winners especially.
That's wild.
I want to sneeze in Nick in Centerville real quick. We'll squeeze him in. What's up, Nick?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey, man.
So the record that will never be beaten was created by our Washington Redskins in the mid-2000s, and nobody will ever win off the field better than them.
I think that's probably
fair. That's probably true, yeah.
There's only been one team that has won off the field 1,000-0 the way Washington did. I believe it was 1,000 straight wins.
When you start adding in their preseason record for a few of those years, like, yeah.
Eddie Olczyk scheduled to join us next. He was on the call of OV's history. We're Grant and Danny.